Serial, the most listened to podcast in history, debuted 2 years ago. And it was just this sort of unlikely cultural phenomenon to bring people into a medium they didn't even know existed, right? The podcast. A radio show which doesn't need a radio. No FM or AM frequencies or radio carriers. All you need is a computer or a phone or an iPod, which of course is the device which gave it its name. And Serial became king of all podcasts because it sucked us into a story of a dead high schooler and the criminal case against her ex-boyfriend. As a piece of theater, Serial relied on this constant sense of did he or didn't he? That odd sensation present as we in 2014 examined a case from 1999 through the eyes of the criminal justice system. Right? He's no longer innocent until proven guilty. He had his trial. The question always present was this: in spite of all the evidence which would have exonerated him in 1999, can we definitively say he didn't do it? Where Sarah Koenig, host and producer of Serial, left us was essentially, I don't know. Like millions of others, I was obsessed with the show, Serial, and its subject, Adnan Syed. Even though this powerful and confusing story ended, the real story kept going because there was still a man in prison serving a life sentence he probably shouldn't have gotten. And his case is the perfect storm, the kind which has got to be taught, if it isn't already being taught, in law schools. Partly because all the law students who are going in now know the story and are into the story. But also because it shows what happens when every part of the system that we lean on and depend on to uphold justice fails to do so. He had an incompetent defender. There was a half-hearted investigation with several Brady violations. There was prosecutorial misconduct. And the failure of the evidence in the case, such as eyewitness testimony and cell phone records, they failed to give us the certainty the law really demands. Serial sparked thousands of personal investigations and people trying to track down the truth, even a trending hashtag about Best Buy and not being able to find a payphone, but also spawned a renewed legal effort. And this past summer, a judge granted Syed a new trial. Now, I like the confluence of story and justice. And I'm not some true crime person. I'm not into these stories, generally. But this story is true and has implications for those caught up in the system and those whose work is the system. There's a new scripted TV show, Conviction, that's covering much of the same territory. It's kind of like Law and Order after the conviction. They're looking into how solid the case actually is. And as I watched the first episodes this week, thinking about this moment we're in and reflecting on this gospel reading, I had a thought that was different than others that I've had about this subject before, about how hard it must be for those officers and prosecutors and judges who think they have their God. People are 99% right. After people who are good public servants and do their work well and they are convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that this God is guilty, they have their God. But The eyewitnesses lied, or they were coerced after 12 hours of interrogation, or that eyewitness got a deal from the DA that isn't above board, or maybe there's DNA evidence linking someone else instead, or the coroner contaminated the evidence as he did with 100 other cases in the same system. Maybe the expert witness has you thinking you found a match, really hasn't matched anything. It's common. It would match with anything. Doesn't matter. Convinced, certain. And when they're in the middle of that, do they fight it? Right? Despite all the evidence to the contrary, do they continue to fight? Obviously they do. Right? We see evidence in the system around appeals. Officers and lawyers are vigorous in defense of their convictions. And I think we want them to be. But if we're followers of Jesus, and now we have proof that the person we've locked up is innocent, I want to know what the people would do. Do they go to their priest or their pastor? Seek forgiveness for being wrong? Not really just for being wrong. That's not it. We can make mistakes. But for that hate, that certainty, that above everything, they know they're right. Do they ask God for forgiveness, for mercy? This question's at the heart of the gospel, and it's fleshed out in our parable this week, a parable with two familiar archetypes, right? The Pharisee and the tax collector. And we're so familiar with these two from the gospels, we may have a hard time digging into who they represent for us, who they can represent for us now. Because we know the script already. We know that Jesus keeps flipping the script on us over and over and reminding the world that we are to look at the world around us inversely, that we might forget just how powerful a suggestion this actually is. A friend reminded me this week that the Pharisees often are taken as goats of the gospel. I saw in a Facebook post somebody even mentioned about the gospel and the enemy of the Pharisee. But the Pharisees were the most respected leaders of the day, deeply spiritual, educated, honest, focused, compassionate people, eager to teach, enthusiastic in faith. They knew the law better than anybody else. The Pharisees are paragons of virtue. They were truly unassailable. So let's not read the parable this morning as dealing with the people with whom Jesus argued. Let's think instead of the most holy people we know or can imagine. Martin Luther King, or Billy Graham, or Mother Teresa, or Sister Theodore Guerin, beautiful, holy people. Maybe our parents might fit the bill. I don't know. The most faithful people we can think of. And then we have the tax collector, the one we are often implored to love and respect. Well, these were the traitors and impure, the ones who compromised their values and were definitely deplorable. People of little faith, conviction, or respectability. So let's take that person or group of people that are the biggest hypocrites and liars and cheaters that we can think of, who don't stand for anything. Or maybe the ones that take advantage of other people and exploit the system and hate the worker and the powerful alike. And maybe they're deeply, deeply selfish. And we take those people and we stand them in for the tax collector. So do we have them in our minds? Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. And the Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, "God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income." But the tax collector, standing far off, wouldn't even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, "God, be merciful upon me, a sinner." I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted. It's hard to be wrong. I hate it more than anything else in the world. And I never want to be wrong. I'll fight you about that, right? But that's only half the story. The Pharisee is so busy trying not to be wrong that he doesn't get what it means to be right. And the one who does get it is the one asking for mercy. Now, you know I love the justice angle. I love when Jesus flips the script and tries to get us to see that we are to love the one society would have us despise, right? Or maybe our own hearts bring it out. Our fears. And maybe they deserve it. Right? The writer tells us that Jesus told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. So I know Jesus was talking to me. I love people the way Jesus tells me, and I give of myself in all the right ways, and I am working to give a higher percentage of my income to the church. My word, Jesus is talking to me. And it's far easier for me to imagine a random Samaritan doing the right thing than it is for me to think that that white supremacist I had as my tax collector being more humble than I am, more spiritually mature, more in touch with our need for mercy. And this isn't just the head stuff, right? The intellectual stuff about what Jesus wants, how to act. This is heart terrain too. Not just about who we've wronged and how, but who we belittle and treat like dirt. And where they are in the dirt of the dirt, they express that more holy posture where that woman washed Jesus' feet with her hair, and he washes the disciples from there, from the dirt. It's hard for the self-righteous to hear the voice from the dirt, to realize that they've been wrong. They aren't perfect. They aren't righteous. All this work is garbage if we don't find ourselves in the dirt too, begging with them. This is a parable about needing mercy, not deserving it. in our own posture, not of certainty and rigidity, but of mystery and humility. That our greatest gift isn't our wealth or power or certainty or the riches of the church, but the wisdom to beg for mercy.